Hi everybody and welcome once again to Capricorn Radio with your host James Swagger. And today I'm going to be joined by Max Egan. And Max doesn't need much of an introduction because he's quite big on YouTube. And I have to say I first came across Max's book Forbidden Secrets and I thought it was a very well put together book. It was using the topic ancient cultures, mysteries and I then came across Max at a later point on YouTube and I just wondered was it the same guy tuned into the show and I found Max talking about different issues and stuff that also appealed to me and I'm very much a humanitarian and you know he was talking very real and current issues and he's talking like somebody who was very awake and it was the sense and the logic that he was portraying the arguments or the subject matter that he was talking and that's what hit home for me. So without further ado, let's bring on Max. Hi Max, welcome to Capricorn Radio.
Pleasure to be here, James. Thanks for asking me on, brother.
But I suppose maybe just start with ancient cultures and stuff, Max. That's obviously appealed to you when you wrote Earth's Forbidden Secrets. And how come you came about to write that little book?
Well, I just found it fascinating to look around the planet and realize that everything they told us about history was wrong. Really, when you look at ancient history, that's what got me into what I'm doing now. That's kind of the path that I took. When I was a very small child, I was fascinated by the pyramids. I just couldn't figure out where they came from. There was this big mystery about the pyramids, you know. So that caused me to start looking at ancient history at a very young age, and it was kind of a hobby of mine all the way through my life. And when you start looking at ancient history, you realize that everything that they've told us about history is wrong. It has to be, otherwise all of this stuff wouldn't be lying all over the planet. So then you begin to think, well, where did it all come from? What's it all about? And you realize that the real issue here is the fact that it's been covered up. Our real history has been covered up. So why would it be covered up? And then you start thinking, well, why? What's this all about? And you start to realize that there is a big conspiracy going on. There is something that's going on that's very, very different to what we believe reality to be. Our whole government system and everything. I mean, it all comes down to this cover-up. But the big why. Why would they cover up our history? It's just history. What's so important about it? Well, really, when you look at some of the stuff that we were capable of back in the old days, it's very empowering to think of some of the stuff that we built. And I don't believe it was built by aliens or any of that sort of stuff, all these ancient structures. I think that we had different technology back then because we were able to use all of our consciousness. We were far more awake to reality. But we got locked into this left-brain corporate system that we're now in. And so that sets the parameters of our belief system. So there's all this stuff that we don't think we can do, but we actually can. So that's kind of where it led for me. And that was just the path that I took. When I wrote that book, I just wanted people to see that because I thought, well, if you can understand that they've lied to you about ancient history, what makes you think that they're telling you the truth about anything else? And they have lied to you because otherwise all this stuff wouldn't be lying around the planet everywhere.
Well, that's fascinating, Max, because that's pretty much kind of where I am at too. Probably a little further down the road, still waiting to come to fruition. But, you know, history's been a hobby for me too, Max, and for the same reason. You know, history, I seen history as wrong, and I was a bit naive. I thought history wasn't being anecdoted properly or wasn't being accounted for properly, and people had overlooked things, and then I soon realized that, you know, there's a conspiratorial nature to ancient history, and you're like, really? You know, you would maybe think about some other political game before you would think ancient history had some sort of a conspiratorial hiding. Like, I guess the thing I think now is, like, I've come to believe, like, you know, what is right and what is the truth, and I've come to search for answers, and I think we're living in conspiratorial facts now instead of conspiratorial theories. And I think that's kind of coming to the limelight. Kind of some of the stuff I want to get into today, and I suppose governments, world governments, these guys are at the top of the chain, Max. So these are the guys we're going to have to look to not to point blame, but to look for answers. It's not about blame as far as I'm concerned, because I don't think blame gets you anywhere. I think everybody needs to search for answers. Would you kind of share that philosophy?
Well, yeah. I mean, I looked at all the ancient history stuff for a long time and I wanted answers. I wanted to know who did it. You know, it's like a big mystery. You want to know who built this stuff. You want to know, you know, where it all came from. You want to know what our history is. And that's why they've taken it away, because if they can remove our history from us, then we don't know who we are. We don't know the power that we've got. We don't know much about ourselves at all. According to our science, we're just a freak of nature. So, you know, you look at creationists, I know we were created from dust to do God's will, and all we got to do is try to do the right thing by this book and hope that we get to heaven at the end of life. I mean, I think there's a lot more to it than that. So that's why it's important to look at history and to look at how we came here. But it is about remedy, you know, because you look down these paths and they're just rabbit holes. You're never going to find out how this stuff was done. There's a myriad of books to tell you, and they're all theories. And even with what I presented in the book, it's a theory. These are my theories on how we got here. It was mainly just to alert people to the fact that all of this stuff exists. You'll find, you know, other books on all of the topics that I covered in that book, but I just wanted to put it all in one spot and show people that, hey, this is what I've found out so far about ancient history, so I think something's terribly wrong. So you begin to go past that, though, and you begin to see that it's about being aware of your current situation. It's about finding remedy for the situation we're in now, because once we do that, once we find remedy for this current situation, then we will be able to deal with everything. We'll find out all that sort of stuff. It'll become apparent by default how we got here. But the problem is that we are looking at remedy from legal means all the time, and we're viewing our governments as the top of the food chain. But really, they're not. If you look at your government, you can imagine that the country of Ireland is like a department store. It's a corporation. And you've got a CEO that's running that department store, but it's part of the chain of stores, which is Western civilization. And basically our governments are just, these are the heads of the department store. These are new CEOs. That's all they are. It all comes from above there, like it's the money system, the whole thing. It's this whole corporate system that came out of the Vatican, the money system, the banking cartels, the glue that holds it all together, the fear-based mind control of our society that makes the people within society believe we need government. That's sort of the way it is at the moment. And you begin to see this, and you begin to see that the remedy is with the people themselves. You've got to understand that the government system, the legal system, it's just fiction. They made it up. It only exists on paper. It's just words in a book. But there's a higher harmonic than that, and that is the harmonic of trust, the trust agreement, which is the basis of your relationship with government. And it's the same with everybody. But, you know, unless people can discover their own uniqueness and their own power and realize that all the people in the world are just people the same as them, and that, you know, we have a slavery system here, they're not going to find remedy. They're never going to find legal remedy, and there's no way to vote people in and vote people out or take governments to court or hold the police accountable for their actions. There's no way to use the legal system to attack the system, because the legal system was created to protect the system, not to protect the people or offer remedy to the people. It's there to protect the system. So you have to step above it. You have to realize it's all fiction. And what we're really dealing with here is a breach of trust. It's a clear breach of trust. Everything these governments are doing is a breach of trust. But, you know, you need a united people to do this. You need people to change their perspective of what the system is and actually look at it from that perspective, you know. And even with what's going on in Egypt and stuff, I mean, this is fantastic to see this amount of people out there in the streets doing it. But how are they approaching it? Are they doing it? Do they really seriously believe they're going to be able to just elect someone else and put them in there? I mean,
it's the change. Where's the change going to come from? It's initial change, but the transition of change. That's what I don't get either, Max.
Well, people know there's a problem, but we had this compartmentalized response. They know there's a problem. They know they want it to change, but they don't know what they want it to change to. And even with all the little problems that we face, you know, the whaling and the coal seam gas and the fracking and the environmental degradation, Fukushima, the homelessness, the wars, there's so much stuff. And we've got all these splinter groups addressing all of these things, but they're all actually just symptoms of the one problem, which is the breach of trust of our elected representatives. Because they're the ones that have put all the legislation in place that's allowing the world to turn into what it is. But we don't hold them accountable because we're always looking for legal remedy rather than stepping above it and realizing that these are just people that are supposed to be acting on our behalf. And they are clearly in breach of trust. And if we tell them to just stop for a moment, because we've looked at the world and we're not happy, and we require you politicians to show cause why you should not be held in breach of trust for your actions and tried for human rights violations. That's the approach we need to take. And it's not something that we need to petition them about or take, you know, like go to a lawyer about. We just need to stop and say, hey, wait a minute, guys. We've figured out what's going on here. The world's a mess and you guys are in breach of trust, you know. So that's the approach I believe we have to take. That is remedy. But that'll only come from the hearts of the people once they discover who and what they are, you know?
That's an important message there now, Max, I have to say.
It's true though, you know, the thing is
powerful, like, you know, because if once everybody realizes that, it only takes a certain amount of people for that to cascade, and then people just to kind of cop on in a way, Max. They need to just cop on and realize that they're sovereign beings, that they haven't got the governments haven't got the right to tell you what to eat, what to put in your food, you know, to put it on paper, as you say. Once it's on, once the written word's on paper, you know, that's meaningless to me. It's meaningless to me.
Well, it's fiction. There's a legal term, and if people really want to look at things from a legal perspective, I mean, I think that legal, it's all fiction, but there is a term within legal, a legal term, which is called sui generis, right? S-U-I-G-E-N-I-R-I-S, sui generis. Now, what this means is that you are unique. You are a unique expression of creation inhabiting the vessel granted to you by the Creator for the experience. You know, people say, who are you, Max? Well, I am Max. Well, where do you live? Well, I live in this vessel that I inhabit. I'm just a frequency of consciousness. Where do I live? Well, I live here right now in this chair. If I move to the other side of the room, I'll be living there because I live. It isn't a matter of where is my address. It's, you know, you ask where I live. I live. That's what I am. I am alive. So what do you mean? You're asking me, where do I live? Is this a trick question? You know, I am a complete unique expression of creation. I stand before you and your legal system in the capacity of sui generis. And if you are claiming you have jurisdiction over me, because you are simply a unique expression of creation as well, I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to fight your system because it's fiction. And I don't believe I have jurisdiction over you. If you want to participate in that system, that's your business. You can do that. It doesn't affect me unless you try to inflict that upon me. But you need to know that I stand here in the capacity of sui generis within your legal system. Look up that definition. That's what I am. I am unique. And you can say to them, well, you know, can I be identified by my fingerprints and by my DNA? Well, yes, then according to your own testimony, I am unique. I stand before you in the capacity of sui generis. Therefore, I need you to provide me with a contract bearing, you know, if you're claiming that you have jurisdiction over me, I need to see a contract bearing the wet ink signature of my Creator that granted you jurisdiction over this vessel. And if you cannot produce that, then I need you to show proof of claim that you are not operating a slavery system. You know, if we can have that approach, what is their response to that? What can their response be to a statement like that or a question like that?
Yeah, you give them no, you give them nothing to come back at, really, do you?
Nothing. Nothing. If they choose to exercise jurisdiction over you and you have already shown them that you're in the capacity of sui generis, well, it's a slavery system and therefore they're breaching their own laws.
Yeah, I just pulled up sui generis there as we were talking there. It's wonderful. I'd never heard that before now. That's awesome. This is why I do the show, Max, to hear and chat and kind of get information like this out. You know, just on the ancient cultures thing, you know, I kind of synchronized with you on that because I was a kid. I never liked the lunatic asylum that I was born into. It was absolutely horrendous. I didn't understand money systems. I didn't understand, especially in this part of the world, Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, you know, that houses were worth like so much money, and that the money was, I didn't understand what money was. I've rejected money my entire life. I've had to go into the system to use it, to earn, to eat. And I've had careers that were well paid. Yes, I never chased money. I chased my career, my intellect. And that stood to me. And I was telling my guests last night at the house, and they thought that was pretty commendable. And I went, well, I was following my consciousness. I was following me, like, you know, and I explored my brain, but like, you know, I'd gone into ancient history and in a way it was an escapism for me because I didn't like the world, Max. I didn't like this horrid, abhorrent, repugnant system like that people seem to accept very easily. And now and again, you'll meet somebody that doesn't. But in my search for ancient history, I had, you know, as you say, I quite like that idea that, you know, we were different conscious beings in the past. And when you look at ancient Egypt and they synchronized the hemispheres of the brain, they were right, the right brain, the left brain, the pineal gland, you know, they just thought in different ways. They had like technology, but like a spiritual technology as well, if you will. That's what I truly believe. And I think that's probably, you know, the lessons that I could now learn from the past. And it's kind of why I do the shows here too. I've just joined up at MSI Radio, as you know, Max, and They talk to me, well, how's this going to tie in with where we are today? And I think, yeah, it's okay to look at the past. You know, you can get answers from the past because you can know where you were. You can know where you are now. You can know where you can go in the future. But I don't think it's right to dwell on the past. That's the failing that you could do, you know? So I guess talk about some consciousness and spirit, Max, because this is the key thing for me. And this is what I try to do. You know, that, you know, if you look for answers and you can see that we were a high civilization in the past and, you know, we had this evolved stature, you know, from a spiritual point of view, you know?
Well, yeah, that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of looking at the past because, as I said, we're never going to know how this was done. We're never going to know really who these people were because all we have is the fractured history that we've got. And history is written by the winners, so you only ever really get one side of the story. And what we've got is such fragments. It's really, really fractured fragments of history. We've got these huge monuments. But what it does is it offers us an insight into what we were capable of and what we are still capable of were we to come back online, were we to awaken to ourselves. Now, there's so much going on that's locked us down biologically, that's locked us down spiritually, that's locked us down intellectually. And it's intellectualism in a big way that's done it, you know, the whole geometry, the mathematics, all of this stuff, this left-brain education that we have, physics, Newtonian physics, it locks us into a belief system where we only believe that certain things are possible. But often I talk about a thing called the measurement problem, the fact that a scientist can't measure an atom until he actually goes to measure it. The electrons that revolve around the atom are infinite. They exist everywhere at once, and it isn't until... You know, the scientist actually goes to measure the atom that those electrons have to choose to be in that one place so that he can measure the atom. It's a conscious choice of the electrons to be there to form the atom so that the scientist can measure the atom. So it's the act of observation that creates the atom. We do it ourselves by observing it. You know, we imagine that this is the parameters of an atom and so it forms those parameters so that we have the reality that we've got. So the only thing that is impossible is that which you imagine is impossible. You know, that which you believe is impossible. That's what is impossible. Anything else is possible. It's just how much you believe in it, how much you believe in yourself. You know, and this is proved within their physics. You know, their physics breaks down. Newtonian physics breaks down once it gets to the atomic level. It gets back to the singularity and the whole equation collapses because it's not based on reality. They don't bring consciousness into it. I believe that all life is energy, all life is consciousness. Everything that exists is a result of consciousness. Every atom, every grain of sand, every blade of grass, every person, every experience, every thought, everything that is, everything that is physical, everything that is non-physical, it's all a result of consciousness, the whole lot. It's conscious energy. That is the stuff of the universe itself, and that's what we are made from. You know, we've lost this perspective. We've been given this narrow view of what reality is and how reality must work and things must fit within this belief system or else it isn't real. And then, you know, this was sort of put into our minds and then we were locked into this corporate system and introduced into this monetary system whereby everybody has to pay to be alive. I mean, what's that all about? We've got to spend our lives collecting paper so we can pay to be here. Where did that come from? Who thought that up? How does that serve human consciousness? How does that serve anything except people who control the money supply? And see, it's the deception of ownership as well. I mean, people have a lot of trouble with this when I go into this. The concept that you can't actually own anything. You can't actually own the land that you live on. You might be the custodians of a certain area of land, a certain sections of land. It's been in your family for generations. You look after that piece of land. That's your place. But you don't own it. It's been here for 4.6 billion years. You're only here for like 100 if you live long. So you don't own it. Trust me, it owns you. You know, no one really owns the land. You're just a custodian of a certain area. And you look after it because you're the custodian of it. But because people have been tricked into believing that they can actually own land, well, then you enslave these people to a money supply. The people believe the money supply is real, and then you create a money supply that's bound to collapse. It's eventually going to implode and it's going to transfer all perceived ownership into the hands of those who issue the currency. So now when they come and take your land, you believe they own your land. And suddenly you're dispossessed of the earth, which is your heritage. And it's only because you believed you could own it in the first place. But you can't own it. It's the earth. It's been here way longer than you have. You don't own it. You know what I mean? It's a trick. It's a mind trick. You know? It's a weird thing. People have a lot of trouble with that. They go, no, this is my property. I own this. I don't know what you mean. I own it, you know, and they can't really comprehend it. It's just a different way of looking at things, but it's only really perceived ownership. And really, because of this monetary supply, that perceived ownership will eventually create dispossession. Perhaps not for you, perhaps not for the generation that follows you, but eventually it will. That's what it's designed to do.
Sure. It's so funny you mentioned the measurement problem. I think you must have heard my conversation with my guest last night. I was telling them about the measurement problem, Max, because I have guests from Belgium, and I joined up with this program on the internet called Couchsurfing, where you give your home to people who are traveling around your country, and you might do the same when you go traveling. It's a free service, and it's a nice way and very interesting way of meeting people. And I have a couple from Belgium, and they're staying, and I have a spare room. I have like a 3-bed house here. It's overlooking the top of Ireland, and the people, sometimes they only get a couch, sometimes they get a spare room, or whatever, like, you know. So it's a nice way of meeting and being generous and being nice to people. And I'm a very open guy. I've opened my home. I've had people coming for a couple of weeks, and I'm having fascinating conversations, Max, and I have a little campfire out the back, and it's a beautiful way to connect with people and just to be kind of generous and nice and try and just give somebody something, like, you know. And I'm in a remote area, so it's a way of socializing too. I'm pretty much chained to my house doing what I'm doing, so... But I was talking about the measurement problem last night, and I shared with them, you know, that just like as you were saying, that, you know, the electrons, basically the tracks on a mobile phone, that they're limited to the size of the tracks on a mobile phone, because the electron doesn't know, it gets confused, like, and that's what they tell you. But it's not confused, because the electron doesn't exist until you try to measure it, or you try to make it appear somewhere. So it can be in another track on the mobile phone. So you have to limit the size of the phones, the tracks, like, due to this measurement problem. It's a quantum mechanical engineering. And when I discovered that, because I'd done a physics with astronomy degree, Max, and then I pretty much changed my philosophy when I did that. And I realized that, you know, the philosophy of quantum physics, and, you know, these guys haven't got a clue, Max. You know, even in the physics, they're giving this narrow window of reality, and the quantum physics is changing that. It's given us a new philosophy, and I think that's a beautiful thing. That, you know, science is doing that, Max, for us. It's
amazing. You know, like Newtonian physics and mainstream science, it's based on the whole concept that everything's made of atoms and things work according to Newtonian physics.
Mm.
You go, that's great. What's an atom? They go, well, we haven't figured that out yet.
Don't know.
So,
a clue.
So you've based this whole theory on something that you know nothing about that you still haven't figured out. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And we're supposed to believe that this is real. And not only that, this is what you teach people is real. And so this is the way people think. And that's what they think reality is. It's amazing. But it's based on something that they have absolutely no idea about. And it's all one big theory, you know. It's amazing.
It is, you know, and that's the thing. I realized that I wasn't getting, I mean, I spent 10 years at university, Max, and then I just realized, what the hell am I doing? I'm just following this academic bullshit. And I don't say I wasted 10 years of my life, Max. You know, I learned, and, you know, I always tell people I have two lines of learning. I learned more in the home when I was young, Max, off my parents. My dad's a genius, you know. He's like into hypnotism, music, and, you know, but he's a mechanical engineer too. And, you know, he gave me an education in the home, Max, you know, but I always have this, what I call the academic learning, and then the real learning, the learning of life and the learning that you get from people. And, you know, I traveled a lot too, and I took jobs, and I took what I wanted out of the jobs. I was there, like, I would work in a very complex environment, and I'd learn. Once I got the learning out of the job, and I'm like, I didn't want to be chained to this job and working in this same place, and, you know, just, I see people do it all the time, and I'm like, you know, you're just a number to the company, like, you know, it's not all about that, like, you know, it's all about learning for me. And I guess after the 10 years at university of doing engineering and physics and science, I realized, you know, it's just somebody's perspective, like, you know, and I wasn't going to go down the CERN route. And I think these guys are making the particles, they're smashing stuff into each other, and I don't think they have a clue what they're doing. There's no incentive. This goes back to the money train, Max. There's no incentive for these guys to discover anything new. They just smash things into each other and look at it and get 40, 50,000 pounds a year for doing it. There's no incentive to learn.
They're trying to prove that Newtonian physics works. They're looking for the God particle. They believe that they will find a piece of matter which will contain the algorithms of consciousness. You know, will be that which creates everything. They believe it's a particle. They're locked in left brain. They're just obsessed with the concept that Newtonian physics is real. They're not looking at, but again, they've got the measurement problem. You know, they've got this whole Newtonian physics which breaks down at the singularity, which can't even explain what an atom is. They're building machines worth billions of dollars smashing particles together to try to prove that this insane theory works. And meanwhile, they're saying, by the way, we've got this measurement problem where we know from our own observation that electrons react to our imagination and react to our thought and react to our belief system. But we're just going to disregard all that. We're going to keep building these huge colliders and smashing things together because we believe that we're going to find the God particle. So their own Newtonian physics completely cancels out the whole rest of Newtonian physics. The measurement problem itself cancels out all of Newtonian physics. You know, I mean, sure, you drop sun and gravity, you know, it hits the ground. I mean, there's certain things that are basic. Okay, not a problem. Things have an equal and opposite reaction and all this sort of stuff. Not a problem. But the whole foundation of how reality works and what matter is and where matter comes from and where consciousness comes from, they haven't got a hope in hell of finding it until they start looking within their own minds and looking within their own consciousness and looking at the state of the electric universe, the energetic universe, because that's where all the secrets are. That's where all the truth is. That's where reality is. That's where it comes from. That's where we come from. That's where everything comes from.
Mm. You know, I could never get physicists to philosophize what they actually thought about the quantum physics, and that's where it changed for me. I just went, I want out of this environment. You guys don't know nothing really, you know. I'm sure, you know the mathematics and you can do your calculations time and time again, but, you know, it's the philosophy of it that got me. And then I was already a spiritual being anyway. You know, this wasn't a major change in my life where I was like one of them and I made the crossover. I'm very much a spiritual entity. I don't believe in organized religion. That's just my philosophy. I don't, if people want to go out there and join a religion, that's okay, Max. I mean, I'm not there to knock anybody or put people down and like, and respect people, whatever their religion. It's just not for me. I think I'm a spiritual being and I've got, I look into the metaphysics, if you want to call it that, you know, and that always appeals to me in consciousness, and they're not addressing these questions, Max. And this is where, I mean, I ditched the whole career thing in and I want to be an author and, you know, and I want to write now, and that's where I want to go, you know. And so the thing is, you know, for me, I want to talk about ayahuasca too, like, you know, but there's other systems out there, you know. This nature has given us systems like ayahuasca to explore consciousness. And again, that's kind of a new, it's ayahuasca tourism is very popular at the moment, you know, and it's a growing in waves and pockets around the globe. You know, I just think that it's a fascinating subject that's been ignored by science, this question of consciousness, Max.
Well, I think it's a really important question. I mean, ultimately, with quantum physics even, what they're trying to do is they're trying to find a scientific way of explaining consciousness. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to do it with numbers. They want to be able to do it with a diagram. You know, it's still left brain. They're just sort of opening up to right brain possibilities, but they're still not just giving themselves to it, not just immersing themselves into reality. And this is what ayahuasca can do. This is why when the whole corporate system was put in place by the Vatican in Pope Boniface XIII, when he created the first Sesta KV trusts and the Unum Sanctum Trust, and they created this whole corporate system, this is why one of the first things they did was create the Crown Corporation, which went out and started wiping out shamanistic traditions all around the planet, the burning of the witches all through Europe, the loss of tribal cultures all around the world. This was all done in the name of the church, all the Spanish Inquisition. This is what this was all about. You know, the Spanish taking over South America and killing all the Aztecs, all the paganism, because they believed they were doing the will of the church. You know, devout Catholics, devout Christians. It was all about destroying shamanism and destroying the ancient ways, destroying the real knowledge of reality, because once you can take the knowledge of reality away from people, you can control their minds and get them to create the reality that you want to create, which is a system of control. So people believe that there's this mind system, this mind control, global prison system, this global slavery system that's all been put in place at the moment. And what they don't understand is that it's already in place. It's been in place for a long time, many hundreds of years, yeah. It's just, they're just trying to make it more technologically viable now. They're just trying to introduce technology into the organism.
Refining it in a way.
Well, because they're attempting to introduce technology into it, it's becoming very visible now. The jail system, the system of control, the system of financial slavery, which is essentially people farming, human trafficking, it's been going on for centuries in all of our countries. This is why all of our countries are corporations. It's all about shifting people around. It's all people farming, the whole lot. We're just commodities to those who control the system. But now they're trying to consolidate it, and it's all turning digital, so it's become very, very visible. And people are beginning to wake up to it. This is what we're seeing in Egypt, what we're seeing in Turkey, what we're seeing in Italy, what we're seeing all around the planet. People are beginning to wake up to the fact that all is not well, and that they are living in a system of slavery, and they have been for a very long time.
Sure. What do you think about ayahuasca then as an effective tool? I don't think it's the solution that everybody should go out and take ayahuasca and try and get into shamanism or paganism or explore consciousness. I think people will find it and use it as need be. Maybe it's one method for some people, maybe not for all. Some people, I think, can naturally, you know, wake up. And for me, I did it to explore shamanism. I wanted to understand shamanism. I'm a very curious being. It opened up a different world to me, and I guess maybe just share our experience or our viewpoint and see does it synchronize. But for me, I've changed my respect for nature. And I go out to my forest every day and I hug trees now, and that's not like a hippie-ish thing to do. It is like, why not? Like, you know, I live in the forest, like, you know, go out and embrace nature. I go out at sunrise every morning. I listen to the birds singing. You know, it's on my doorstep, and I'm sitting in the house all the time, like, you know, working, like, take an hour out, do it, like, you know. But I've made major changes in my life since that. Like, but do you think that's good for people to try or explore? Or?
Well, look, you know, it gives people an insight into what reality actually is. I mean, we're supposed to have far more DMT circulating in our system, so we're supposed to be able to see into other realms. We're supposed to have a lot more higher senses online. We've really been biologically limited in what we're capable of. What ayahuasca does is it opens up some of these centers that have been closed down, and because it's taken with a certain vine called the Carpi vine. This vine has a spirit, and it guides you through that world, and it shows you things in reality that you may not have known were there before. And so it's highly beneficial, you know, for that. It's not something that most people used to do. This is what the shaman used to do, the doctors used to do. You know, if you had an ailment, you could go and see a shaman, and he would take the medicine. And he'd communicate with the spirit world, and the spirit world would tell him what you needed to do to heal yourself. This might seem like, you know, black magic or voodoo to people, and I know we've got to use left brain synthetic medicine. But if you can look at the world as an energetic place that you're connected to, the way all other animals are connected to it, but we've lost that connection. You know, when you look at instincts of animals, you know, a group of animals will leave an area before a tsunami comes. And they'll leave 3 days before. And you'll find that a tribal culture that may live there, they'll also leave. They'll go up to the hills a few days before the tsunami comes because they can read the energy field around them. They know that things are about to change. And we call this instinct, but really it's higher senses that we should have access to, but we've lost access to them. The reason ayahuasca tourism has become so popular is the shaman that are left, I mean, their culture's almost been decimated. It's not going to last much longer. And if the shamanistic culture is completely wiped out, we're going to lose our connection to the plants. We're going to lose our real connection to the Earth Mother. And they also realize the danger of this. And they realize that if Western culture continues to destroy the world at the rate that it's doing so, it's going to destroy the entire world. And it's going to take these shamanistic cultures down with it. And, you know, bringing our ayahuasca out to the Western world and getting people to try this and have these insights into nature and these insights into what their real relationship with the planet is imperative at this time, because people need to establish this connection, re-establish this connection. They need to see how important it is for humanity to get back on track. And a real key here, something that people should all take notice of, is that, as I said before, when this corporate system was created, the mandate of the corporate system was to go out and destroy this shamanistic culture, get rid of it at all costs, vilify it. If you find these cultures, wipe them out. There's a clue there. They wanted to do that because the return to this shamanistic tradition is the biggest threat that this system faces, because a return to this shamanic tradition is what wakes people up to what reality is and how it actually works. So, yeah, it's a huge threat to them. And I recommend that anybody that's interested in trying ayahuasca should absolutely go and do so. Be careful where you go. There is a lot of, sort of neo-shamanism that's going on, but there are good places you can go to in Peru, and you'll find that there are many shaman and many servers that are touring around the world now and getting people to try this medicine, because it's a medicine. It's not a drug. It's a medicine.
For me, it was Cusco, and it's quite touristy there, and so there wasn't any, there were proper shamans with shaman ceremony centers there, so that was probably a good friendly atmosphere there, pretty safe as well. Did you see serpents then? I had serpents teaching me, and the serpent gods came, and a lot of people see serpents, and just wonder, did you see serpents, and what do you think of that as the curiosity that everybody has such a similar experience on ayahuasca?
Look, I got a visit from the Earth Mother herself.
Me too. She picked me up and gave me some love and cuddles, and that was fleeting. But she says, I'm going to introduce you to some friends of mine, and it was the serpent gods came up. So, but yes, the Earth Goddess and the serpents. So,
well, she was there. I mean, a giant head, basically, just floating there with a headdress on, with green emeralds studded all over her face, and. I had the shaman's ancestors come into the room, and I had all of the shaman who was singing the song. I had all of his ancestors sitting around me in the room. I had, and they would look at me, and they'd move one eyebrow or just twitch a lip or move one finger, and I would know exactly what they meant. I would know exactly what they were telling me. I had a plant grow up into the room and connect me to the spirit of the Amazon. I virtually had the whole Amazon jungle download its emotional journey into me. And once I'd experienced that, a jaguar run through the room. It was all in the spirit world, but it was, and I did all sorts of cognitive experiments to see whether these were hallucinations. Okay, I'm hallucinating all this stuff. They're very, very vivid. They look like three-dimensional hallucinations. So I closed my eyes and they all disappeared. They weren't there. And I suddenly saw strange colors and like actual hallucinations. And I thought, well, that's weird. So I opened my eyes again. The room was empty. And then they slowly, your eyes are open again. They all started walking back in. And I thought, okay, well, so it's a hallucination I'm having with my eyes open. So I pulled the blanket over my head. I thought, okay, my eyes are open. I should still be seeing this stuff in front of my face. But I couldn't see it. I couldn't see the blanket. And even though it was pitch black, I could see the blanket. So, well, how can I even see the blanket? It's dark. And so then I pulled the blanket down and looked, and there they were. They were all standing in the room. So I was literally seeing into the spirit world. And the ancestors of the shaman who was singing had come to visit me to tell me their story and to show me the story of the Amazon and why we need to protect the jungle, why we need to return to nature, why we need to reestablish our connection with this Mother Earth that we live on. Because everything about this society is designed to remove that connection, pave it, put fences around it, put nature over there, but don't you go over there, we'll put a fence around it, don't walk on the grass. It's all designed to remove our connection from nature. And once we can reestablish that, then that's the way back. We have to do it. We absolutely have to do it. And that's what I got from the experience. And the emotional journey of the Amazon, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you what it was, because it was an emotional message. It was given to me in higher languages, higher senses. There are no words to explain to you, So that's what I experienced in my ceremony in Peru in the Amazon. It was quite profound.
Beautiful, beautiful. Very powerful, very powerful ayahuasca. And they call them these, and other medicines, the plant teachers for mankind. And I guess that's why they call that they call this vine the vine of souls, because you can meet souls and ancestors, which is what happened with you.
Well, the soul vine, the kapi vine, it actually has a soul. It's a guide through the experience. And an interesting thing, if people have seen Graham Hancock's TED talk on ayahuasca, where he says that, if you trace the use of ayahuasca, you'll find that when we started doing cave paintings is when the use of entheogenic plants became popular. So it's very likely that these plants are put here in order to expand our creative consciousness and to guide us on the way through our conscious evolution, and that our government's action in making these plants illegal and taking these medicines away from us is perhaps the biggest crime that has ever been committed against the human species.
Sure. I've had Graham Hancock on the show, fascinating guy, and I love his work with ayahuasca and how he tells it and orates it to the world. And yeah, the TEDx talk, just for the listeners, I recommend everybody to go out and Google that, Graham Hancock TEDx. They pulled it off the internet. Did you hear about that, Max?
Well, they hid it in the back of the TEDx site. It wasn't there in the main program. They didn't actually ban it or anything like it was said, but they hid it, so it was very, very difficult to find.
Mm. As Graham says, they put it in the naughty corner. But let's talk some politics, Max, because I heard you talk about politicians as being psychopathic, and it's something I always believe too. I talk about Freemasons being psychopaths, and that politicians are the same. I think there's another Irish author, and here he talks about politicians being psychopathic. These guys are devoid of any feelings of guilt, because I don't think they would able to. These guys are no different to somebody who's going out and pulling the trigger, if you ask me, because these are the guys that want to get to the top to run the wars. And if you're sitting there doing it with pen or a gun, it doesn't matter to me. You're still, I don't think there's any middle ground here, Max, is what I'm trying to say. You're either a good soul or you're psychopathic, like. And these guys, and you say, yes, there is differences out there, but, you know, there is people maybe trying to make a good thing, but inevitably they're going into a system that's, you know, inherently against them.
Well, how they're going into a system that's inherently psychopathic. See, it was created by psychopathic minds. I mean, you look at it, it's completely psychopathic. And when you've got a system that was created by a psychopathic mind, then the morality of that mind becomes the morality of the system it creates. And therefore, all the people that operate within the parameters of that system are forced to adhere to that type of morality. So it brings out any psychopathic or sociopathic tendencies that people might have. There might be people that enter politics with the best of intentions. They've just gone down a path of completely left-brain education, and they actually believe that politics is something more than theatre, and they can actually make a difference. And so they enter into the political arena. But if they're good-hearted people that really want to make a difference, they will never, ever be able to get to a position of power because the system won't allow it, because it's an inherently psychopathic system. That's the problem. So you can't ever really fix the system from within the parameters of the system. But it is. It's completely psychopathic. So it's to say that all politicians are psychopathic, well, it might not be the right thing to say, because, as I said, there are probably some people who do enter with the best of intentions because they want to make a difference. But then there are others who simply want to climb to the top of the pile and they want to control everybody. And you've got to be more than a little sociopathic to even want to do that. And if you're in a position where you're actually running for that top office in the country, well, these guys, look at them, they've got campaigns, virtual hate campaigns against the other candidates. So they want to claw over everybody they can and belittle everybody they can and say, I'm the guy you want to vote for because I've put so much bad press out about everybody else that they've got to be bad, you've got to vote for me. Well, why would you even want to vote for someone that was going to treat people that way? Was going to launch into hate campaigns against other people? Why would this guy be clawing his way to the top, desperate to get there as much as he can because he wants that top position? What for? Because he's a psychopath and he wants to control people. That's why. I mean, I'm damned if I want to be in a position where I'm running a country. I don't want to control people. I don't want to be making those decisions. I don't want to do any of that stuff. I want to teach people to be able to control themselves and govern their own lives and be all that they can be. And learn to live in a vibrant community and help those around them and to return to self-governance and self-responsibility and self-determination. That's what I want. So why would I want to be in that position? You know, and when you've got a system that's inherently psychopathic like this, well, you find that it rewards psychopathic and sociopathic behavior within the system as well. And psychopaths recognize each other. They'll always promote the psychopath lower down the food chain to some position of power to control the rabble beneath him. And it's only the psychopaths that ever get to the top positions because they recognize each other and that's the system they've constructed.
I may be wrong on this and I'm open to scrutiny on this one, but when you hear Tony Blair talking about, you know, he's in the Middle East peace envoy now, which I think is ironic. But when you hear him talking about the Iraq war that he was involved in, that he basically sanctioned and the British ally part. But, you know, he talks about like himself in a as a third party, like this situation is removed from him now. It's almost like a psychopathic trait. Like, you know, it's, if you were to analyze people with a psychiatrist or something, you would see that as psychopathic behavior. He talks about himself almost in the third person, even, if you know what I mean, Max.
Oh yeah, for sure. You'll say it was the British government that was to blame for this schmozzle, you know. But of course, I was the one who was in charge of the British government at the time. I'm the one who cooked up all the information and told all the lies and made sure that you bought this scam. But now I'm going to say how terrible it was for the government to have done that. I mean, of course. I mean, he's a psychopath. This is what psychopaths do. I mean, the fact that he's a Middle East peace envoy. I mean, what is this? This is. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. I mean. It's incredible.
We just had somebody in the Irish Parliament called Barack Obama a war criminal. Like, it just got hundreds of thousands of hits on YouTube. And I live in Northern Ireland here. I don't know if you've been up this far. I know you've been to Ireland, but, you know, I just think him, Barack Obama, coming and talking about, you know, the peace process in Northern Ireland, that made me sick. You know, I just like, I want to stick my foot in the telly when I say that. Like, you know, makes me angry. Like, I'm trying not to curse here on the radio, but
well, you know, Nobel laureate, you know, the Nobel Peace Prize, just as he committed another 20,000 troops to the war, the illegal war in Iraq. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it?
Four or five wars the guy's fighting, like, you know, and he's talking about peace process, you know. But the thing is, I think she's another politician at the end of the day. I don't do politics. I've never voted in my life. And people say, well, if you don't vote, how are you going to make the change? I went, no, that's wrong. I don't want to vote because I don't believe in the system at all, good or bad. I think, or indifferent. Like, you know, it's not wrong. It's corrupt. I've always been like that. I'll never vote my entire life. I would rather do the jail time than have to vote. Like, but that's just me. But I think it's very interesting that Claire Daly had said that in the Irish Parliament, and you know, she got scrutinised for it. You know, but
well, as she would. But really, it's true. I mean, he is. He's guilty of horrendous war crimes. Just the drone strikes and the stuff that's going on in Pakistan. I mean, he's bombing all sorts of countries. And what's going on in Syria? What happened in Libya? The whole thing. I mean, the US has got their fingers, you know, they're knee deep, not even finger deep. I mean, they're elbow deep in this stuff. It's ridiculous.
I obviously think there's methods of control there that only the psychopaths get to the top as well, and they get the good ones filtered out at ground level anyway, so.
Well, they do. That's what we were saying before. I mean, that's the way the system's designed. You might enter into it with the best of intentions, but you won't last. You'll never get to a position of power because you get filtered out way down in the bottom of the food chain.
Let's talk about Edward Snowden, because I know you've talked about him recently. I'm a little undecided about him. Is it a PSYOPs program? Is WikiLeaks a PSYOP program? I don't know. But I just know that the message, regardless either way, that, you know, these guys have been caught out. Whether it's, maybe they're letting us know. Maybe they're just trying to let us know that they've been snooping on us. Maybe they don't care anymore.
The question is, where's the outrage? Why aren't people doing more about it? Because this is Watergate on steroids. You know, Nixon got dismissed for doing this to one hotel and essentially one person. And now we find that all of our Western governments are in collusion to do this to the rest of the world. This is a clear breach of trust. You know, and people are arguing whether Snowden's a good guy or a bad guy, whether it's a control release, whether it isn't, whether it's alphabet agencies, you know, fighting each other or whatever. They're missing the opportunity that it's providing for us. This is the opportunity for us to hold our governments accountable for their actions. This shows us that our governments are completely out of control and they are conducting espionage not only on their own citizens but on the entire planet. And not only that, but they're doing it in our name. They're getting this out and they're spying on the whole world, and they're doing it in your name and my name. They're doing it in our names, but they're spying on us as well. And okay, we'll have some surveillance. Let's have some transparency in government. Let's put surveillance cameras and data recorders in every government house and every parliament building in the Western world, and let us, the people, assess the actions of these guys, and then we will decide whether we need to have surveillance all around the globe. You know, this is just a continuation of the system of fear-based mind control. A lot of people think, oh, this is okay. It's okay for them to have all this surveillance because of 9/11 and they're keeping me safe. Well, it's not about that at all. It's about knowing everything that everybody's doing so that they know who is against them, because they don't want these people out there. It's just so that people can disappear in the night if they want them to. That's what it's all about. And it's a gross breach of trust. And I think people need to see it as the opportunity that it is, regardless of why it was released. The fact that it proves that everything the alternative research has been saying for years is a huge opportunity for the people. So where's the outrage? That's what I want to know. Why aren't the people up in arms about this? Why hasn't the whole US government been impeached? Why isn't the Australian government being called to attention? The British government, all the governments who are involved in this, the whole Echelon program, everything we've been saying for years, why aren't these people being held accountable? You know, this is breach of trust, and it's got to come down to the people of each nation to stand up and do it. Implement, like I was saying, sui generis. You're unique. You can't have these public trustees doing what they're doing. Why have they created this system of people farming and financial slavery? How dare they claim to have jurisdiction over anybody? And if they're enacting programs like this where they are carrying out espionage against the entire planet over the power that we give them, then show cause why they should not be held in breach of trust. That's the attitude we need to take, and that's the opportunity that it's provided for us.
Yeah. I mean, even on the espionage thing as well, and especially in America, I know that they hit this message home, but as much for us over here too in the UK and Ireland, but, you know, they talk about like, well, I've nothing to hide. There's nothing, what big deal. Let them look. I'm just talking to my friends. I'm just joking around. I'm doing this and doing that. It's not about that. It's about somebody making a decision whether you're a terrorist, whether you're not a terrorist, whether you've done right or wrong. And who's he going to do that to? Are they going to farm that out to India like the telephone calls like? You know, are they going to sub that out to a cheaper organization who can't make the decision? And what if they get the decision wrong? What if they're looking at you for the wrong reason and they get it wrong? You know, they shouldn't be looking in the first place is the point, like, you know. But
exactly. Exactly. And look, the fact that they charged you with espionage for doing this. I mean, what's espionage? It's spying. It's releasing information to the enemy, transferring information to the enemy. What did he do? He released information to the public. So according to those parameters, the public is the enemy. They just admitted that we are the enemy. So let's do something about this. Let's hold these governments accountable for their actions because it's time we did. We can't allow the world to keep going in the direction that it's going. We can't allow these psychopaths to keep controlling our lives and stealing everything they can from us. That seems to be the only purpose of government these days, is to steal the wealth of the population and control what's left. That's all they're trying to do. And yet these people are simply public trustees that we appoint to positions of power to manage our infrastructure for us. They're all in breach of trust, and we have to deal with it from that perspective. So we've got to respect each other and unite as a community and realize what's going on here. You know, the only problem we have with each other in our communities usually is financially based, you know, economically based, you know. One's got more stuff than the other, or we've got bills to each other, whatever. You know, people are in a state of shortage and scarcity because of this money system. It's all contrived. It's all done by the governments. We've got to put all that aside and start standing up and reclaiming the planet, really. It's time we did it. I mean, all these governments are in collusion, and the only way it can be dealt is through people stepping above the legal system and stepping back into the power of their own individuality.
Future mankind's at stake, Max. Like, this is important. Like, this is significant. That's just the message I try to drive home to people. Wake up, like, because, you know, everything's on the line here.
Well, it is. It's very, very significant. It's a very, very pivotal time in history. But, you know, it's an organic process, and I think it's happening, you know. The beauty of it is there's no real face to this revolution. There's no one person that's going to do it. It's everybody that's going to do it. So it's a revolution of consciousness, an evolution of consciousness that's happening within the hearts of all the people. And all it really takes is for people to realize who and what they are. That's where the remedy is. And that's what we're seeing. I think that we are going to do it. I think that we are going to come through. The more they try to lock us down, the more we're just going to move the goalposts the way we always do. We're very creative. We're very spontaneous. We just do things when they feel right. So I don't think that they have a hope in hell of actually getting us to really get under control.
I think they're going to have their work cut out for them, Max, Stephanie. And here's the thing, you know, humans, and I know you've talked about the Palestine thing before, and the last time we spoke before the show, I wanted to talk to you about that, you know, and, you know, it's just human trait. I don't side with the Israelis or the Palestinians in terms of politics, like, but when you look at what's happening to the Palestinians, I feel for them. I'm a human. I feel empathy. You know, I'm a humanitarian. I like to talk about these things because these guys are, and the Irish have known been for resilience long through their history, but these Palestinian guys, like, these guys are resilient. You know, they show that quality. It's a human trait. And it's at an extreme now. I mean, they're trying to snuff these guys out of existence, like. But, like, denying them basic food and water, and I know you've been there, you've actually visited the region, Max. So maybe just show that, and, you know, it's maybe just ended on the war thing, like, you know, this is where the world's going to end up, like, you know, we're just going to be facing human resilience, fighting to the bitter end, like.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're heading for a global Palestine if we don't take the matter in hand. Palestine is a dispossessed people, you know, and they've forgotten, you know, all the politics of the region, whether it's Hamas, whether it's Islamic Jihad, whether it's, you know, different politics in the area, whether it's Fatah, whatever, it's irrelevant. In the middle of it all is the Palestinian people, these beautiful people that are just people that are trapped in this area because of all of these ridiculous politics that are going on. It's all based in fiction anyway. I mean, it's really, really shocking. But what people need to pay attention to is the fact that these are a dispossessed, forgotten people. This is what happens when you allow, you know, a corporation, a corporate world to take control. And soon we will have many, many people in many countries that are dispossessed like this. We're seeing a huge amount of homeless in all of our Western countries now. And it's becoming like a global Palestine. And that's what we'll see if we don't pay attention. I think Palestine is again an opportunity for us to notice man's inhumanity to man, to notice what it's like to be a dispossessed person, to have no nationality, no hope of a future, you know, and to just be left there to die and to be deprived of all things that you normally would take for granted, stuff that we wouldn't do without for a day. These people do without all the time. They have salt water showers. I mean, It's shocking that the state that these people are forced to live in. And I intend to go back there at the end of the year, actually. I want to get back there before the end of the year. I wanted to be back there this month, but it didn't work out. I ended up not getting a ticket. I was supposed to arrive in Egypt on July 2nd and go into Gaza on July 3rd. But the border was closed. I mean, it's good that I didn't buy the ticket. My intuition must have been working for that one.
But, sure.
I would have been stuck in Cairo for the whole revolution had I decided to go, because I think it was around about that time when Morsi was overthrown and the revolution sort of happened.
So did you make friends in Palestine then?
Yeah, I've still got some friends in Palestine. I made some great friends. I was actually speaking to one of them earlier today.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, you know, and here's the thing, you know, I think we're living in 1984, George Orwell's 1984. I remember reading the book as a kid. We used to have to read George Orwell books in school, but 1984 wasn't one of them, but I'd read that one on it. You know, I just think we're living in that era now. Like, you know, that.
Well, across between 1984 and Brave New World.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But even to the extent that neither of them could imagine. I mean, even Huxley said that he can't believe how much, before he died, he said he can't believe how right his book was, and that he wouldn't have said that it was going to be like that in 200 years. He would have said, looking at the current progress, he'd say 50 to 100 years.
Mm. You know, I sometimes think that, you know, maybe the slow release of, or the Snowden's release of, the controlled release perhaps is like to see the public's reaction to. You know, they're conditioning us, the population, into.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Like I said, where's the outrage? If this had happened in the 1960s or 70s, our governments would be out of power already. We're the kids on this. The kids are used to this. They're programmed to accept surveillance. It's in all the video games. It's in all the movies. They think it's cool technology. And hey, I'm not hiding anything. What's the matter? You know? They've got their Xboxes with all. Xboxes with facial recognition now, televisions that have facial recognition, two-way viewing, you know.
I put some masking tape over my webcam. I'm a paranoid individual. Maybe I'm not paranoid, you know, but I see these smart TVs as well. I seen them advertising a smart TV, Max, the other day, and they're targeting it at babies. I went, how pathetic, you know, that the baby gets recognized by the smart TV and it changes the channel onto the kids thing. And I went, really? Is that what you're marketing this as, like, you know, that's how lame. How lame is that, like?
Programming. I wonder what they switch the program to and what subliminals they put in there while the parents are out of the room, eh?
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine that? You know, it's scandalous. Scandalous. Look, Max, we're going to wrap it up with that. I'm very keen to see how you get on on your trip. We might actually be in Peru at the same time. If we are, we'll do lunch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm planning on November, hopefully, to get there.
Me too. November, December is what I'm doing, so. I'm going from the north to the south. I'm going up to, I want to see, check out the Chiapas culture on the north border. I'm also going to Paracas, and I'm going back to Cusco again, so. But, we never know. Our paths might cross over there, Max, so.
Well, I hope so. I want to make a documentary about a place that I went there called Tierra Vida and help people understand a little bit about the loss of shamanistic culture and the need to preserve these traditions. And then hopefully from there, to go back to Gaza.
Right. That'd be very interesting to see that documentary. Any word on the TV channel? Are you going to go ahead with that, or have you?
Well, look, let's see if I can get a show, if I can put a show together. It's a big job putting a TV show together. And so see how I go. But even if I start traveling, well, I can probably do live shows. I mean, we'll see what happens. There's a good chance that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very interested to see the outcome of that, Max. So it's a pleasure having you on the show. It really has. Thank you for your time today, Max.
My pleasure, James. Thanks for asking me on.
No worries, mate.